here we go. We are
up to Parshat Vayeshev. Parshat Vayeshev takes roughly 12 years from the sale of Yosef until 2 years before his release from the Egyptian jail. Until now, the stories that we have in Bereishis, deal with the Avot. And it deals with relationships that the Avot had with their their non-Jewish neighbors. Okay? Avram had to deal with Paro. He had to deal with Abimelech. He had to deal with the four kings. Yitzhak had to deal with Abimelech. Yaakov had to deal with Esav. He had to deal with Lavan. From now till the end of the Sefer, we're pitting Jew versus Jew. It's very sad. You know, what do you do when you have Jew versus Jew? There was a famous story in the Volozhin Yeshiva that had a debate who should be the Rosh Yeshiva. The Netziv or of Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, known as the Beis Halevi, the Brisker Rav. They're both great candidates, and they called in all these Dayanim to try to figure out Dayanim, big rabbis, and they figured it out. In the end, they decided that the Netziv should be the primary Rosh Yeshiva, and Rav Yasha Ber should be the assistant. And one of the people that were on this panel said, this is very difficult for me. I give drushes. I travel all over and give drushes. And every time I do, I try to pit the hero against the villain. I build up the hero to be the biggest tzaddik ever and the villain to be the worst person. And throughout Bereishis, that's easy. You know, you could have Avram as the hero and Paro Abimelech as the villain. But then I come to the end of Bereishis and I have Yosef Ve'echav. Who are you going to call a villain? It was very difficult. And he goes, that's how I felt today, trying to figure out the Netziv or of Yasha Ber. Like, this is tough. And that's what we're up to now. It's Jew versus Jew. The theme of all of Sefer Bereishit is pretty much Brito Shel Avram, the covenant that God made with Avram, who would inherit Avram, and can this family / society work? Right? This is now, we're trying to figure it out. We had said earlier that God first created the world to just be monotheistic, and it didn't work. 10 generations went by, press restart with Noah. He tried again from Noah. Didn't work. 10 generations go by, and now he says, okay, now we're just going to start with a family. Avram's family will be the role models. And will this work? Can this family be turned into the role models for humanity? That's really what it's all about. We will see in this parsha Vayeshev, the tragic flaw that threatens to tear the family apart and the seeds to redemption that will, Bezrat Hashem, keep the family together and therefore the entire nation. Okay? Now, we're introduced to Yosef at the age of 17. And he's hanging out with B'nai Bilha and Zilpah. Okay? That's the way Rashi understands it. He hangs out with B'nai Bilha of Zilpah. I guess the understanding is the six brothers from Leah didn't feel that he could be with their clique. So he hung out with the other brothers. That's Rashi's view. According to the Ibn Ezra, it's much worse than that. It's that even the B'nai Shvachot, Gad, Asher, Dan, and Naphtali, they mistreated Yosef. When it says, "Behu nar et b'nei Bilha et b'nei Zilpah," the Ibn Ezra says he was their boy. Not the way you guys say, "Oh, he's my boy," but he was their boy. Like, "Yo, boy, fetch me that." He was their servant. Okay, which would then explain the lashon hara that he said about Bilha and Zilpah's children to Yaakov, because they were bossing him around and treating him like a servant. Now, what's interesting is even though he says lashon hara, we're told right away, like if I would have expected, Yaakov would reprimand them for speaking lashon hara, right? When my kids would come when they were little and try to tell on one another, I would stop them and I would say, okay, is it dangerous? If it's dangerous, I want to hear it. If it's not, I don't want to hear it. That's what I would tell them. I don't want them to grow up thinking you should say lashon hara. If it's dangerous, tell me. Otherwise, don't say it. It's a little bit strange that here it is, we're told that Yaakov was told lashon hara, and the very next pasuk is, and Yaakov loved Yosef. Yaakov loves him. Why? Because he was his ben zikunim, his child from his old age. Now the truth is, there is a younger brother. What's his name? Binyamin. So why isn't Binyamin the child of his old age, his ben zikunim? Probably because of 8-year difference between Yosef and Binyamin. And so for 8 years, Yaakov developed a relationship with his youngest child, even before Binyamin came on the scene. And this is how the relationship began. Could be that Yaakov showered Yosef with love because he was an orphan. His mother had died, and therefore he felt the need to give him more than the other brothers, his other sons. Other sons had a father and a mother, while Yosef didn't. Now, even if this is good intentions, in the end, it backfires. In the end, it causes the brothers to be jealous of their father's love towards Yosef more than his love towards them. And, you know, they didn't look kindly upon the special clothes that he got, the ketonet pasim. You know, it would be as if he came back from his business trip, gave everyone like a small present, but Yosef, this big present, look what I got you. And everyone's like, what? We got this tiny little thing that you got in the airport. Why did he get this big, you know? So, but Yaakov's thinking, kid's an orphan. I have to give him something. This causes jealousy. And it's exacerbated by Yosef's dreams. Not only does Yosef have dreams of grandeur, he decides to share his dreams with his brothers. Right? The first of his dreams, we have sheaves in the field bowing down. From Masechet Bamitzia that we're learning this year, the second parak. These are alumim, right? We talk about the krichot and the alumot, the small bundles, the big bundles. It says the alumim, alumim, alumim. We have these large sheaves that are bowing down to his sheave in his bundle in the beginning. Okay? Their sheaves are bowing down to his, and their response to his dream is, will you rule over us? It was clear what it implied, and they are opposed to this. And they said, who do you think you are? And if you're having these dreams, well, every psychologist will tell you, most dreams are based on what you're thinking about during the course of the day. So you basically tell us your daydreams that turned into your night dreams. And, you know, who do you think you are? Now, that's only dream number one. But then he not only tells them, but he tells his father his second dream. And the second dream, the sun and the moon and 11 stars. Now, it sounds like a father, mother, and the 11 brothers are bowing down, not to a constellation, to Yosef. Yosef himself is there in the sky. Okay, there's probably some song that Solomon knows about that. And there's probably some song about it. And they're all bowing down now to Yosef. And David is ambivalent. Yaakov is ambivalent. He, on the one hand, you know, feels like this is like a terrible thing that he's saying this, and he should reprimand him for this. But at the other hand, he loves Yosef so much that he's sort of like pulling for him. You know, like, wow, that would be so cool if you were like a leader. Wow, that would be amazing. And the ambivalence does not help at all. And the family, you know, is slowly falling apart. Right? The rebuke is somewhat soft and doesn't really help matters. The brothers now, we're told, go to check their property in Shechem. We know that they lived there before. The previous parasha we spoke about it would make sense that Yaakov still owned property there. Maybe they had livestock, they had cattle, they had land, and he sent the brothers to check on it. And then Yaakov sends Yosef, go tell me how your brothers are doing. It's a strange request, especially since Yaakov knows that they don't like him so much. But Yosef is there. You know, Abba, you want me to go? Hineni. You know, I'm here for you. He goes there and he can't find them. Now at this point, if we were Yosef, we would return home and say, Dad, I looked for them, I couldn't find them. Right? And that would have been good. You would have done what your father wanted without actually having a confrontation with your brothers who you know hate you. But Yosef doesn't do that. He's looking for them, and he meets a mysterious man. The man says that your brothers went to Dothan. Now, Rashi is bothered by the irrelevance of this story. He met a man, and he said, it was like, oh, and he stopped and bought a cola on his way down. Oh, he asked for directions because he made the wrong turn. Like, what do we need to know? That, says Rashi, the insignificance of this story shows us how significant it is. And this man is no other than an angel. And the angel was there to direct Yosef to where the brothers are and to basically start Golas Mitzrayim. The Ramban doesn't believe we need to have an angel. It could actually be a person, right? Maybe, it would make sense to me, if they're checking on their property in Shechem, that they have a supervisor while they're not there. And that man would recognize his brothers and say they had been there. And I heard them saying they're going to Dotan. But according to the Ramban, the story is told because God has many different messengers. One way to say messenger is Shaliach. Another way is Malach. So when the Torah tells us Malach, it need not, it doesn't even say it, it says an Ish. But even assuming, like the Midrash, that it is a Malach, says the Ramban, the Malach could have been of flesh and blood. And he was used by God to get Yosef to have this confrontation with his brothers. Now, Rav Soloveitchik points out that without the sibling rivalry, we never would have had Golas Mitzrayim. Now you might say to me, that's not true. In the Brit Ben Abatarim, we were already told, Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lo Lahem, you're going to be foreigners in a land that doesn't belong to you. So obviously we needed to have Golas Mitzrayim. Says Rav Soloveitchik, is based on the Netziv, that could have been satisfied when Yaakov went to Laban. Yaakov went to Laban, and he spent 20 years. Now you'll say to me, it's not 400, so I'll say to you, neither was it 210. We spent 210 in Egypt, and Chazal play all sorts of games to say we're counting from when Yitzhak was born. And the 210 could equal 400. So we would have played games to say 20 equals 400, and we still would have started from when Yitzhak was born, and we would have been redeemed. And, you know, whatever that redemption would have been while still being in Israel without having to suffer all the 210 years of slavery and babies being killed. But the sibling rivalry is what caused Golas Mitzrayim. Solomon, you had your hand up a second ago? Golas Mitzrayim, the Egyptian exile. Okay, no problem. When the brothers see Yosef approaching, they decide to kill him. Because they view him as a rodef. What's a rodef? Someone's trying to kill you. And why do they view him as a rodef? Think about all sibling relationships in Bereishis. How do they all end? Yeah?
One brother trying to kill the other?
Either killing or being kicked out of the family. Let's start with first sibling rivalry, Cain and Hevel. Does not end well for Hevel. Okay. The next, we could say Avram and Lot. Why would I call that sibling? Because Lot is the son of his brother. Okay, son of his brother. Then we have Yitzchak and Yishmael. Then we have Yaakov and Esav. Then we have Yaakov and Laban. And Laban is his mother's brother. So all of these ended in some sort of separation or death. And the brothers don't want either. And they view Yosef as a threat. They're ready to kill him, and Reuven doesn't want it to happen. Reuven pleads with them, please don't kill him, he's our brother. And it's met with a shrug. How do we know it's met with a shrug? Because you read the psukim, there's no response, and then it says Vayomer Reuven a second time in the same pasuk. There's no need to say Vayomer Reuven and then Vayomer Reuven, because when he basically said Vayomer Reuven, don't kill them, and then it says Vayomer Reuven, it's basically, because they all said, are you kidding me? They looked at him like, really, that's what he's saying? So he had to come to plan B. Plan B was, let's convince my brothers not to kill him right now. Throw him in a pit. He'll die eventually. And I'll save him sometime later. This is Reuven's plan. This is what Chazal tell us. And this was his intention. Now what happens? The brothers all go to eat. And they see a group traveling down towards Egypt, traveling caravan of Yishmaelim. And Yehuda says, well, we don't have to kill him. Let's sell him. Let's sell him. He won't die, but he'll be out of our hair. We'll make some money on it at the same time. And sell him down, yes.
You remember Yishmaelim, weren't those people going by like spicy people, like selling spices?
Yeah. Yishmaelim meant like businessmen. Okay? That's how the Yishmaelim are referred to as businessmen throughout Tanakh. Now, could they have been descendants of Yishmael? Absolutely. But not, you know, but that was the phrase for businessmen.
I heard a midrash that was saying that they were spice sellers. Like they were transferring
spices. Yes, there's a midrash that talks about how Yosef, when he went down, he at least had like a comfort, and maybe that made him think God is still with me. Right. Now, according to Rashi, this is exactly what they do. They take him out of the pit. They sell him to the Ishmaelim. He's out of their hair. They take his coat, dip it in blood, and they send it with a shaliach back to their father to naively say, Abba, was Yosef anywhere near us? Because we found along the road, I think this is his coat. Hakerna, do you recognize it? Is this his coat? Now, they had a shaliach do it instead of them. So if they would have done it, it would have looked suspicious. So the shaliach, find the coat, quote unquote, bring it to Yaakov and say, found this coat, and I think I've seen your son wearing it. Is it possible? What was the purpose? Purpose is, as traumatic as losing a son in war is, being KIA, killed in action, is better than MIA. MIA is missing in action. If your son is killed, you at least have closure. Son is missing, you live your whole life wondering, what is going on? Will I ever see him? So they wanted to give their father closure, and they sent a shaliach with a coat to Yaakov. Now, according to the Rashbam, the brothers thought to do this, but in the end, they actually never sold him to Egypt. Because if you look at the psukim, it says the Midianim took him out of the pit. So while the brothers were eating some distance, the Midianim happened to be walking by, and they heard someone screaming from a pit. They pulled him out. They sold him to the Ishmaelim. And therefore, when the brothers go now to execute their plan, they will pull him out of the pit and send to the Ishmaelim. They find an empty pit. And they actually believe that Yosef was Tarof Taraf Yosef, that he was devoured by a wild animal. They then take his cloak and dip it in the blood and send it for the same exact reason, to give their father closure, but they are convinced that Yosef is actually dead. And this is why, later on, in front of the Egyptian viceroy, Safnat Paneach, not knowing it's Yosef, they talk about how they killed Yosef, because they actually believe that they killed Yosef. Okay, if you look at the psukim, this fits in my opinion a lot better with the words, the Rashbam's reading of the psukim, than Rashi's. But we're all brought up on Rashi. This also explains why Reuven panics when he sees the pit empty. According to Rashi, you have to come up with all these ideas. Oh, he was off, you know, mourning and doing tshuva and all these weird things. Like, you're in the midst of trying to save your brother. Now's the time that you're leaving him without anyone watching. According to Rashbam, it's perfect. They're all eating. He runs back thinking, this is the best time for me to convince everybody. Let's not even sell him. He's our brother. Let's just bring him home. And then he finds the pit empty. He goes, woe is me. What's going to happen? I mean, to Rashi, why didn't the brothers say, yo, buddy, don't worry about it. He's not dead. He's down in Egypt. Right? But he, like I said, according to Rashi, it's more difficult, my opinion. According to the Rashbam, it all fits in very, very nicely. This whole story is the story of missed opportunity. First, Yaakov missed the opportunity to discipline Yosef, possibly keep the family together. Second, Yosef missed the opportunity. This idea I heard from, I'm blanking on his name right now, Rav David Silver. Had he found Yosef in Shechem, Shechem is a city of brotherly love. It's where Shimon and Levi risked their life to save Dina. Had he met them in Shechem, who knows what that would have brought about. Maybe there would have been a reconciliation in Shechem. But he missed that when he said, they left from here. Holchu mikan. They went to Dotan. They're no longer in that place where they're ready to receive, you know, to have this brotherly contact. And third missed opportunity would be Reuven's plan. Reuven's plan, throw him in the pit, save his life. But in the end, he got there too late. Okay, too late, either the brothers, too late, the Midianim. Whatever the case is, the plan just doesn't work out.
What is a Midian?
Another nation. Also, children from Yaakov, I'm sorry, from Avram. Avram marries Keturah and has other children, six other children. One of them is Midian.
Oh,
okay. Now, at this time, yeah, question.
Well, why do we believe that the brothers were so holy up there doing such terrible things? Yeah, Yosef was a little bit of an annoying little brother who's being a pain, but
right.
I have an older brother, I have right. I know what it's like.
Right. So as I said, this is very difficult. So the brothers all felt that he had a din of a rodef, and they were doing the right thing. This would be the sphere. Doing the right thing. Okay? Maybe they also felt that, we favor Rachel's kid, maybe get rid of all of them. So, okay. Now, at this time, Yehuda leaves his family and goes to Adullam. This is what it seems to say in the Pesukim. Vehi be'etahi, at that time. Mefarshim point out that chronologically it's very difficult to say this. Because how many years go by from when Yosef is sold to slavery till the brothers come down to Mitzrayim? Anyone know? 22. He was 17 when he goes down. 30 years old, he becomes the viceroy. 7 years of plenty. In the, he's 39, 2 years of famine. So they come down. The 70 souls come down. He's 39 years old. 22 years go by. In this ensuing 22 years, Yehuda is now going to go to Adullam. He's going to fall in love with a woman and marry her. He's going to have a son named Er. Er is going to be old enough to marry a woman named Tamar. He's not going to impregnate her. He's going to die. The next son is going to be old enough to now marry. He also is not going to impregnate her. He's going to die. The third son, Shelah, is not yet old enough. They wait until Shelah is old enough. When Tamar sees that he's not being married, she's now going to see, we'll see in a second, tricks Yehuda into having relations with her. She will then give birth to twins, Zerach and Peretz. Now, if that's all it will be, say, oh, Zerach and Peretz came down, 22 years, that would be fine, except either Zerach or Peretz, I think, they have their own kids. By the time we go down, all of this is in 22 years. So now you could say, yeah, they got married at the age of 9, and it's sort of weird, but there are Mefarshim that say that. So other Mefarshim say that no, when it said Vayehibe Etahi, we just want to compare the Yosef story and the Yehuda story. Yosef and Yehuda are going to become our prime characters for the remainder of Chumash Bereishis, and all we really want to know is that while Yosef is going to be at this time period getting married and having two sons, Yehuda at this time period is going to be bearing a wife and bearing two sons. That is sort of what we want to see here. And that's Vayehibe Etahi. It wasn't at that time, but it was sort of contrasting the trajectory of the lives of Yosef and Yehuda. But like I said, you do have opinions in Chazal Mefarshim that try to tell you, well, they got married at the age of 9 and all sorts of things like that to try to make it work within the 22 years. I prefer not to go there. Now, the story in full, not saying it quickly,
why
goes like
two?
This. What?
Why those
they
two
become,
two?
They're going to be the main characters for Chumash Bereishis and continuing throughout Jewish history. Now, Yehuda marries. He has three sons. And the oldest son marries Tamar. Now, his oldest son is named Er. Er is Ayin Resh. And the Torah tells us Er was Ra. Ayin Resh was Resh Ayin. Basically, he had a Tafkid, and he went diametrically opposed to his Tafkid. He wasn't Ayin Resh, he was Resh Ayin. He was evil. He did not want to get his wife pregnant. He dies. Onan, the next in line, does Yibum. Okay, this is exactly how the Ramban explains it. It was an ancient form of Yibum. Yibum, and he marries his sister, because she has no kids, marries his sister. But he too is Ra. And there it says he doesn't impregnate. Since it says he too, we understand that Er also, that was his sin. First, we didn't know. Yehuda now has a third son, but he says he's too young. So he says to Tamar, you go off to your parents' house, I'll be in touch. Okay.
Who's Tamar?
Tamar is his daughter-in-law. Okay? And at this point, Yehuda assumes the reason why his son's died is because there's something wrong with Tamar. And we're basically told through the narrator he has no intention of marrying off Shelah to Tamar because he thinks that she's the cause of the death of his two sons. She's like the black widow. But the truth is we know from the narrator that it's the exact opposite. Shelah comes of age and never given over to Tamar. Tamar hears that her father-in-law just became a widower himself and now went off on some business trip. and she dresses up like a prostitute, and she picks up Yehuda. Now, Yehuda doesn't recognize him, doesn't recognize Tamar, and and has relations with her. Now, any prostitute worth her worth is not going to give out freebies, so she says, this is the oldest profession in the world. I need money. He didn't have any money on him, so she said, I'll take collateral. So what does she take? Staff, signet ring, things that are very identifiable. Okay? Takes this, and all is good. He goes back home, sends out a servant, says, go and look for the prostitute that was sitting at the crossroads there, pay her this money, and get me back my stuff. He comes back and says, you know, couldn't find her. Or, literally, it says, there was no prostitute there, which can be understood that she was not a prostitute. But anyway, doesn't find her. And he says, all right, stop asking around. You're making me into a laughing stock. He says, did anyone, who slept with my master? Who's like, God, he's like this high? Okay. So they said, okay, forget it. She's come home already. And okay, life goes on. Word gets back to Yehuda that his daughter-in-law, supposed to be waiting, basically indefinitely, but waiting, is pregnant. He says, what? That is a busha to the family. This is disgraceful. Bring her out to be burnt. Bring her out to be burnt at the stake. Okay? Yes.
You wasn't going to marry her up anyway, so I don't understand a whole lot yes. of reaction.
Yes.
It's like a like.
Yes. Out. I mean, I'm making it as if he wasn't going to. It sounds that way to me, the fact that we're told that Shel is already of age. Okay? But we don't know. And if certainly years went by and he's still not marrying Shel off. I don't know. But he says, take her out to be burnt. Now, if you commit adultery, are you chayav sreifa? No. So why is she being burnt? So Rashi says, okay, based on a midrash, almost all of Rashi is based on a midrash, that she is the daughter of shame. Shame, we met him in last week's parasha, also known as Malchi Tzedek, right? Malchi Tzedek was shame, and he was Kohen Le'el Elyon. He was a Kohen. Ah, but if a Bas Kohen has an illicit relationship, then you do get burnt. So therefore, Tamar is a daughter of shame. You do the years, it's very, very strange, because shame, he survived the flood, and they were talking about hundreds and hundreds of years went by, and Tamar is now the daughter-in-law. Okay, whatever, but this is Rashi's interpretation, and that's one way. What I found most interesting is Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. It's also found in, I think, the Baal HaTurim. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, or Rishon, said that not that she'd be burnt and killed, she would be branded. She would be branded. Now, when I first saw it, I thought it was so cool because sort of like the scarlet letter. Scarlet letter, if you a woman committed adultery, she had to have a big A pinned on her clothing that everyone should know she was an adulteress. But then I saw even cooler than the scarlet letter is that in the Code of Hammurabi, and according to historians, Hammurabi could very well be Amraphel from the four kings versus the five kings. He is from the time period of Avram Avinu. In the Code of Hammurabi, it says that if a woman was adulterous, she was branded on her forehead, that everyone should know that she was an adulteress. It says, beautiful, fits in perfectly with Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. He had no idea about the Code of Hammurabi, but this was his conjecture, and this is what it says in the Code of Hammurabi, that that's what it was. He wasn't going to kill her, per se, but have her branded as an adulteress. She sends the Eravon to Yehuda and says, do you recognize these? Using the exact same words. Hakerna, please take a look. Same words that Yehuda sent the Shaliach with the bloody coat of Yosef. Yaakov, do you recognize these? Do you recognize this? Now, Mida Kenega Mida, what goes around comes around. It's thrown back in his face. Do you recognize these? And she gives him the option to like lie and say no, just kill her. But he takes responsibility. Takes responsibility. Says, I am the father. Says, Satka Mimeni. So you can read it as, she is more righteous than I, or Tzadka Kama Mimeni. It's for me. I fathered the children. Now, this act of Tamar changes all of Chumash Bereishis. Because Yehuda learns what it means to be responsible. She puts him on the spot. Here's the collateral. Make a move. Your call. What are you going to do? He takes responsibility, even though it's embarrassing. And later on, he teaches Yaakov to do the exact same thing. Yaakov doesn't want to take responsibility. His most beloved son, Binyamin, is now being requested to be brought down to Mitzrayim to save Shimon. He doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to risk one son for the other. Same way that Yaakov didn't want to risk Shela to be given to Tamar, because who knows, maybe he'll meet the same... I'm sorry, Yehuda didn't want to risk giving Shela. Maybe he'll meet the same fate that Erev Onan did. So he teaches him, you have to take responsibility. Sometimes a risk. But he does it. Tamar is the heroine of Sefer Bereishis. She brings the family together. She teaches Yehuda what it means to be a leader. I already asked before about Yehuda and Yosef. Yehuda turns into the leader. Malchus Beis David comes from Yehuda, right? Leadership was taught by Tamar. Now, Yosef, we switch to Yosef in Beit Potiphar. And he is extremely successful. And he's noticed, and he's promoted. And he's noticed not just by Potiphar, but by Eshet Potiphar. And I'm sure there's songs about that as well, Solomon, correct? I knew that. And she tries to seduce him daily. But he refuses, out of loyalty to his master and loyalty to God. One day, she strips his clothes off and he runs out naked. She screams and accuses him of attempted rape. And Potiphar has him put in jail. Now, just by the fact that Potiphar had him put in jail shows that he did not believe his wife. Because if he believed his wife, what would have happened to Yosef? He would have been killed. But now he has to save face. Like, you know, what's he going to say? Oh, he's a liar? That really she was seducing him? See, he had to do something with the servant. So he's thrown into jail. Okay? But it's obvious that he doesn't really believe. In jail, God helps him find favor with the warden. And he's given a position of authority. Now, the question that we have to ask ourselves, why was Yosef punished? He's a tzaddik, right? I mean, how many guys here, a woman's trying to seduce you, she pulls your clothes out. How many guys here would say, I'm running out naked, right? Like, Yosef's a tzaddik. We call him Yosef a tzaddik. So, like, why is he being punished? What do you want to say?
He was about to do it.
Okay, so the first answer would be, why was he there in the first place? He's getting punished because he never should have gone there, right? That's the issue. He never should have been there in the first place. Second idea was, he was arrogant. He was arrogant with his brothers. He was arrogant in Beit Potiphar. Like, I'm in charge. I'm like, you know, he says to Eshet Potiphar, nothing's kept from me. Right? The first time he starts to show humility is when he's in jail. When he says to the butler and the baker, tell me your dreams, God has interpretation. It's not like, come on, I'm good at this, right? He starts to say, any gifts he might have, he recognizes that it's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are told that the butler and the baker are thrown in jail out of disrespect to the king. The Sforno says it's not that they themselves disrespected the king. It's one of their underlings that did. But being the head chef or the head butler, the buck stops with them. They're held responsible for what was done by, you know, some servant. And they are now thrown into jail. And they languish there for some time. And then each of them has a dream. And Yosef inquires, says, guys, what's with the mood change? Why are you so down? And they tell about the dreams that they had. And he says, tell me, God has interpretations. And the butler says, I dreamt that I saw a vine with three branches, and I was squeezing the grapes from the branches into the cup of Paro and handing it to Paro. To which Yosef said, I will tell you what this means. In 3 days, you're going to be reinstated into your position. When the butler sees that, he said, oh, you need to interpret my dream as well. My dream is that I have a basket on my head, and birds, I have three baskets, I'm sorry, on my head, and birds are coming and eating from the baskets of the breads that I have on my head. To which Yosef says that in 3 days, you'll be hanged. The reason is birds would not dare go and eat from bread that they thought was being held by a living human being. So if the birds were going and eating from it, it must be you're a dead man. And this is how he understood it. Now, 3 days go by, and we're told it's Paro's birthday. And he reinstates the butler, and he hangs the baker, just like Yosef had told him. Now, a question that had always bothered me till I found the Malbim was, why is there even a need for the baker in this story? Could this story not have just happened with the butler? Why do I need the baker? And the Malbim says so beautifully, because then the butler might have thought, oh, Yosef got wind of the fact that it was Paro's birthday in 3 days, and maybe as a birthday wish, he would pardon a prisoner and not really think it had anything to do with him. But with two equally important people, one is pardoned and one is hanged, he realized that it's not just, oh, this is a birthday thing that he does, and that's why he should have realized, ah, there's something to Yosef. Yosef tells the butler, before he gets out, right when he tells him the dream, don't forget me, mention me to Paro. And the parasha ends being told that the butler forgot Yosef. Yes, v'yishkachehu. Now, I was always bothered by this. It bothers me, like, aren't we supposed to do our ishtadlus? Aren't we supposed to have, like, yes, we believe in God, we have to take an effort as well? And I still don't have a good answer. Okay? I once, in a shul that I daven, I would give this to our Torah on Friday nights, and I once just, like, got up there, and I just explained my whole question, and I said, ain't samchan al hanes, we're supposed to do ishtadlus, what did he do wrong? And then I said, I know you're all waiting for my answer. I don't have one. And I sat down. And then throughout the Shabbos, people were coming over, and it generated more discussion at the table than any time I actually gave a Dvar Torah. I had people coming over to me all the time. It was great. I said, like, what did Yosef do wrong that he got punished for 2 years? Like, aren't we supposed to do our part? Like, I'm just reminding him, I'm here, and like, so anyway, I don't know, there are people that want to say on the level he was on, it's considered a lack in faith, I don't know, like I said, I still think the question is better than any of the answers I heard, which is why I don't remember any of the answers that I heard a lot, because if I would have heard a really good one, I would have just told you, and the answer that I like is, but I haven't heard a good one, so I'm asking you, ask around, and see if you have any good answers, because right now I'm still bothered by this question. Yeah.
Usually you can't end an aliyah or a pasha on a sad note. And it's always bothered me. Or every single part of the trick, the children,
that's a good point.
Portions, so you don't end up having a sad note.
That's a good point. Maybe, okay, let's use that to say that somehow this is good. Now, I could see the good very easily. In the end, he's going to tell, Butler's going to tell Paro at a very climactic moment, which is going to cause him to become viceroy, which is going to save Bnei Israel coming down to Mitzrayim. So you could say, in the end, this will all be good.
I think that makes more sense.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, Chazal say that he was punished. If he wouldn't have used the word punished, I'd have no problem. But you read Rashi right there, it says he was punished for doing this. I was quoting Chazal. So I have a problem with using the punishment. When I begin the next parasha, I'll explain to you also about the 2 years. I'll get to that. But right now, we end with him being forgotten, and we'll pick it up next time. Bye. Thank you.